Hi, everyone. I'm Scott Branley.
And I'm Alicia Coakley. Every member of the church has a story to share, one that can instill faith, invite growth, and inspire others.
On today's episode, we're going to hear how a horrific accident and years of recovery taught one woman that all things are possible through Christ. Welcome to Latter-day Lights. Hey everyone, welcome back to another edition of Latter-day Lights. We're so glad you're here with us today, and we're really excited to introduce our special guest, Shanna Arnold. Shanna, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, good to have you. I kind of cornered Shanna at church, and I was like, I need to hear your whole story, because she was making these comments, and they were wonderful comments during Sunday school. And so we went out to a place called Brahms here in Texas. It's got some ice cream and had a little girl time and heard the story, and I was like, holy cow, like you have to come be on our show. So I'm really, really excited that you're here and that you're going to share the amazing journey that you've been on. And thank you. Yeah.
Thank you for being Alicia's friend. That's
cool. Usually my friends pay me, you know, but with her, I'm like, it's free.
Yay.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Shanna, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I'm 35 years old, and I have two kids and a husband. So it's kind of like three kids. I live in Lubbock, Texas, and I've been married for 16 years, and I've been a member of the church my entire life.
And you have a lot of family here, don't you?
Oh, tons.
Yeah. You guys kind of rule Lubbock. Someone somewhere is related to Shanna in this town for sure. All right. Well, Miss Shanna, why don't you go ahead and tell us, where does your story begin?
Back in 2003, I was with two of my friends. We were going to a football game. Our team was playing Odessa, and we were coming home from the football game, and there's three of us in the car, me and my best friend, and then Courtney, the driver. She's a year older than us, so she could drive, obviously. It was the darkest night of 2003. You could not hardly see anything, and vision was very low. But then I was in the front seat with my seatbelt on. I had a feeling, a strong feeling, like the spirit was telling me to move to the back. I was a teenager, so of course I ignored it a few times. But, you know, the third or fourth time I heard it, I felt the prompting to move to the back seat, and I did. And then fast forward a little bit of time, Courtney, my friend, we were in a car accident, and it flew both me and my friend Janelle out of the vehicle. She was thrown 50 feet, and I was thrown 150 feet. She died on impact, but they found me through helicopter and flew me to the Covenant Hospital here in Lubbock, and I spent 3.5 months in a coma. I don't remember the accident. I just remember the stories I've heard. But I do remember having the sitting in the front seat and having the spirit tell me to move to the back. I do remember that. And that had to come back to me, because at first I had no idea what had happened. And I had no idea I was in high school even. I was in high school for 6 weeks. And then I had the accident. But it wiped out all my memory, and then basically I had to relearn everything. I had to learn how to walk, how to talk, how to breathe again on my own. My first goal in the hospital was to hold my head up for 3 seconds.
And you were, what were you, 14, 15? How old were you?
I was 15 years old.
15 years old, and your best friend Janelle, right? Now, how long had you guys been best friends?
For a few years, I think. I mean, because she moved to Lubbock, and we went to the same school together. And then we went to elementary and junior high, and then high school went together. But obviously, she didn't get to finish high school. But
yeah. And was she a member of the church, too?
No.
At the time? She wasn't a member of the church.
She came to church with me a few times, and I went to her church a few times, too. And then she said that she really liked our church and she wanted to join. She mm-hmm. always was at my house. And so usually late at night when we had, not late at night, but like later on in the evening where we had scripture study and prayer as a family. And we'd invite her to join us since she was there. And she loved it. She just says, mm-hmm. I love how your family is so Christ focused and how y'all are there for each other and support each other. And mm-hmm. she told her mom that she really wanted to go to Shanna's church, really wanted to join. Her mom was happy at first. Mm-hmm. But then she told her husband, Janelle's stepfather, that Janelle had found a church that she wanted to go to. He asked what church it was. And then after he found out it was the Mormon church, then he did not let her even, he didn't want me to be friends with her anymore, but mm-hmm. he liked me so much that he said, you can still be friends with her, but I don't want you going over to her house anymore.
Oh, wow. Dang. Wow. Sad. And you, at the time, you were really into, softball. Was it softball?
Yes.
Softball, right? Tell us a little bit about that. Like you were really good, weren't you?
I don't want to toot my own horn or anything.
Oh, toot it.
But, you know, I had to learn all this because I obviously forgot. But the memories came back to me, and that was important. You know, and that was very touching for me to be able to remember. But I was on – I played softball, like, starting when I was, like, 8 or 9. And mm-hmm. then I was on this team, and then first starting out, and then – as I got older, you know, more teams wanted me to play for them. And then I joined an all-star team. And then after that, they wanted me to play on these tournament teams. Mm-hmm. And I was on 6 softball teams at one time playing.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. You know,
on the all-star team and the traveling team and just everything. Wow. And then the only thing about that that the coaches didn't really like was that I refused to play softball on Sundays. Mm. And I think that helped bless me, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, you know, definitely. After my accident, I was supposed to get a softball scholarship somewhere to college. Mm-hmm. I had scouts looking at me when I was still a freshman. And they didn't believe that I was a freshman. They thought I was a junior or senior. Because
of how good you were.
They were surprised when my dad told them I was a freshman. And they were just taken back. And then those same colleges that wanted me, you know, they all prayed for me. And they wrote me letters and stuff about how, you know, how God was in control and stuff. And how I was going to fight through this. And that they're still, I'm on the top of their prayer list.
Wow.
That's awesome. Very touching.
Yeah. So Shanna, and I'm trying to think back to like the, you know, when you talked to me a little bit about your story before, because there were some things that were just so amazing and miraculous. One of the things that you talked to me about was the cell phone. Mm-hmm. Do you want to tell us what happened with the cell phone? Like, what was that all about?
Okay. I was, you know, 15. But I didn't have a cell phone yet, mm-hmm. because they just came out not too long ago, I guess. They became really popular not too long ago, and I didn't need a cell phone, right? Mm-hmm. But then I begged my mom to let me take her phone to the game because I wanted a cell phone. She says, no, Shanna, you can't because Courtney has a phone. If there's an emergency, you can call from her phone. And I said, no, she said, you need something, call from her phone. And then I said, "But Mom, I was a teenager. But what if there's an accident? I need your phone just in case, you know, just in case." Mm-hmm. Not thinking that anything was going to happen. But she eventually handed it to me and said, "Just promise me that you'll bring it back." I said, "Mom, I promise." And then after the accident happened, my friend's cell phone flew out of her car. She couldn't find it. There was broken glass and stickers everywhere. So she tried to find her phone, but it was nowhere to be found. She couldn't find it because it was so dark. And she even tried to flag down cars, but they couldn't see her. Wow. And so she said a prayer to God to ask him for help, you know. And she went to go find her shoes because her shoes flew off in the car mm-hmm. during the accident. And she found her shoes eventually. And in my right shoe was my mom's cell phone that still worked. So it flew out of my pocket and landed in her shoe.
Oh my gosh.
That's how it landed in your friend's shoe.
Yep.
Wow. Oh my goodness. How was that? I mean, I know, you know, you weren't coherent for when the accident happened or right afterwards, but I know that you were able to talk to family and friends. What happened when they got to the hospital? Because I know you had mentioned that you and your best friend Janelle, mm-hmm. you guys looked like twins.
Yes, we did.
Didn't you? Like, and, uncanny. Okay. Yes. What was the difference?
I'll go back and tell you. My friends, like my family, used to always get us mixed up when we were mm-hmm. to our backs and we were mixed up. And then they couldn't tell us apart after the accident. They picked up me through helicopter and then they rushed me to the emergency room or the OR. And then our both sets of parents were there. Or her mom was there. Janelle's mom was there. And then my mom and dad were there. And then they said, quick, identify your daughter. And then they looked at this girl going down the hall on a bed. And then they said, well, they look so much alike, we can't tell them apart. And then the doctors were like, well, how can we tell them apart, you know? And then they said, well, this one, the one who's breathing alive, has blue eyes. And that was obviously me. And my friend's mom just lost it. And my parents heard her. She's on the other side of the hospital, but they heard her scream from where they were at.
Yeah.
And my mom wrote in this journal for me, and she said, you know, learning that Shanna's best friend, learning that your best friend had died, that has got to be the hardest thing, you know, and I don't know how you can recover from that. Well, she didn't say that, but I said, you know, because it was hard for me at the very beginning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How long was it before you woke up?
3.5 months.
So you were in a coma for 3.5 months.
Yes. And usually if you're in a coma for longer than 2 weeks, then doctors just tell you you're going to be a vegetable for the rest of your life. That's what they told my parents. And somehow their faith just told them that I'd be okay. Now, they didn't know if I was going to make it or not. But if I was to pass on, they knew that was my time. But if I stayed, then they knew that I had more work to do here.
Yeah.
Do you remember anything while you were in the coma?
Yes, I do. I remember people talking to me, and I can hear the people talking to me, but I couldn't talk back to them. So it was like people were talking to me, and I just stayed there. And because there's different stages of coma, and I got to the point where my eyes were open, and they were huge because of some of the medication I was on. Mm-hmm. And so I was awake and everything. Well, I was awake, but I was technically still asleep. But I could hear everything, but just wasn't able to communicate with them.
When you finally could communicate with them, like, did they tell you what happened, you know, the accident and with Janelle?
Well, not right away. They, first of all, because I was a good speller in school, they brought a Scrabble board up and told me to write down the letters of how I wanted to communicate, because I was there, you know, but I was not able to speak to them. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and then a funny story about that. I was not eating the food that the hospital tried to feed me, and I just kept refusing it. And then my parents asked me questions. They're like, why aren't you eating the food? Because I was being too fed then. But mm-hmm. they handed me the board, and I spelled it Nasty. And then they're like, okay, it's nasty. So they got me to eat other foods then.
Okay. Wow.
Do you remember coming out of the coma at all?
Maybe a little bit, but not a whole lot. I remember that there were a lot of people and kids there from my school that were trying to praying over me and stuff. And it was like the hospital was flooded with kids and people wanting to see me. Wow. And the hospital, like the other patients, they had no room to go get into their rooms. So they asked my parents to make an announcement for my school and church not to come visit me for a while, because wow. No one could visit. So my dad was in the stake presidency at church. He mentioned all the wards not to come visit me, you know, mm-hmm. right now, because there's just too much. They just need mm-hmm. to focus on me and not have everybody, you know, around and everything. So,
yeah. And I remember you telling me something about your dad giving you a blessing.
Yeah, yes. It's pretty cool. My dad and brother, my oldest brother, Jeremy, they gave me a priesthood blessing whenever I was stable enough to have them do that. So mm-hmm. They blessed me that I'd have a full and complete recovery. And then after my dad said amen, then my mom looked at him. My dad had tears in his eyes, and she said, was that blessing from you, or was that from Heavenly Father? And my dad said, honestly, I don't really know. He could not, you know, he didn't know if he was just saying that out of the care, the love of the father has for the daughter. And then mm-hmm. Elder Stuckey came, because we're doing a state conference, and I guess that October. Mm-hmm. And then he came to Lubbock, and my dad's job was to pick up the brother from the airport, bring him to the stake center. But at that point in time, my mom said to my dad, are you going to go? Are you going to tell them about Shanna and her accident? And my dad's like, you know, dear, I have thought about that, but I have prayed, and you know, the people in Lubbock need to hear from these elders. And so I'm not going to bother them with coming to see Shanna. And so my mom was like, okay, I agree with that. And then so the days went on, right? Well, it was time to pick up the present, you know, the church leaders from the airport. And my dad picked him up and got in the car. And one of the first things that Elder Stuckey said to my dad was, President, can we go to the hospital to give your daughter a blessing? And he had no idea how they heard, but they heard, you know, about the tragic accident that I just went through. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was a blessing that. And then they gave the blessing, that almost the exact same blessing that my dad and my brother gave me. So after that, my mom and dad were like, that came from the Lord then, because it was almost verbatim, you know, almost, I guess that's not the word, but almost identical to each other. So,
mm-hmm. Wow.
That's awesome.
So when you woke up, you found out that you had lost Janelle, and then you got, I assume they told you how hard of a battle you were going to have to fight to, mm-hmm. to recover. What was it that they told you? Like, how much work did you have to put into it? And what did they think was going to happen after you did wake up? And they were like, okay, well, she's not going to be a vegetable, but did they ever think that you would fully recover at all? Or?
They didn't think I'd recover. They kept, you know, telling my parents that if she recovers, she's not going to be able to live a normal life. And they said she'll never get married, never have kids. She won't be able to be stable enough to be on her own. Mm-hmm. And so that all happened, and I proved them wrong. Whenever I met Dane, my husband, you know, he was a different guy. He was not like the other ones, but he wasn't a member of the church. Mm-hmm. And then I invited him to come to church, and we met on a blind date on April Fool's Day. And then I invited him to church that night, you know. I said, hey, you want to come to church with me on Sunday? He says, I'm not doing anything, so sure. Because he had been church hopping around. Mm-hmm. But he didn't find a church that suited him, you know, all the way. And he came to church with me on the first Sunday of the month, which is Fasting Testimony Sunday.
Fasting Testimony, yep.
Yep. And that can make it or break it for somebody, you know. They can say that they can really felt the spirit there, or some, depending on what the testimonies are about, they can say that was the weirdest thing ever and scared people away.
Yep.
But I asked Dane how it was, because I was so nervous, you know, and I don't know if I paid attention at all, just, you know, kind of shaking and like, so Dane, how did you like it? And he goes, honestly, that was the coolest thing I've ever been to. How you have your pastor invite members of the church to come up and bear their souls to you. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but that's called a bishop. And he invites the members of the congregation to bear their testimonies. Right. And he's like, okay, whatever it was. And I'm like, yeah. So, wow. And then he came to church with me for 3 months. And then decided he wanted to be baptized. Wow. And he was really legit, you know, and he, his big hang up was he didn't smoke or drink or anything, but he did love his coffee. Mm-hmm. He drank it so much, you know, and it didn't faze him. So he'd drink it throughout the day and at night and everything when he wound down for the evening. And then I told him we were the Word of Wisdom with the sister missionaries. And he was like, and when they brought no coffee or tea, he goes, oh man, tea is fine, but coffee, I don't know how you do that without coffee, you know. So I don't know how to do life without coffee. Because he used to grind his own beans and prepare his own coffee. And he'd drink it there the whole day because it didn't faze him.
Wow. And,
you know, we really prayed hard for him, you know. And then he told me, he's like, you know, I've been praying about drinking coffee and we're not. And he said, but I was like, what's the harm of one more pot? Just for good riddance, you know. So then he said, I'll just have one more pot of coffee and then I'll give it up. Well, he took his ground beans that he grinded himself and he was setting up his coffee. And then he put all his beans in the coffee pot and then he went to go plug in the coffee pot and then did a big brown puddle around the coffee pot. And he said, oh, coffee pot's dead. I guess it means no more coffee. So he plugged it and he threw it away. He threw all his ground beans away, whatever it was, and just said, okay, no more coffee. And then gave it a cold turkey.
Wow.
That's gotta be hard.
Cool. So when you guys started dating, were you still going through your recovery as far as like, were you still relearning how to walk and move and talk? How long did that take you?
Well,
you know what I mean? Like, what did that look like? What did that healing process look like for you?
It was, for me, personally, it was a long process, you know, but looking back now, it just seems so short, you know? But it took me, I came back to school and I rejoined my softball team. I was pulled up as a freshman. I was the only freshman who got pulled up to the varsity softball team. And so whenever I was a freshman, was in junior high. So I had to go travel from the junior high to the high school every day so I could practice softball. Mm-hmm. And then my sophomore year, like, I was 6 weeks into it. And so I played my whole freshman year, and then I missed my sophomore year. And then I went to school, returned to school the second semester, my junior year. So I started playing again on the softball team my junior year. Mm-hmm. I went back to school. Because softball is at the end of the year, you know. And then I played my senior year, too. So I still played for 3 years, not four, like, I kind of hope to, but.
Yeah.
So you didn't have any broken bones or anything?
I didn't really have many cuts or scars or anything. But they said the biggest injury was to my head. I had a traumatic brain injury. And I broke my pelvis and some of my other bones that I don't remember which ones, but then after I got better and everything, after I got married, I said, I went to my OBGYN appointment and I said, now, can you tell me, I've always wanted to be a mom ever since I was little. You know, I got my first nephew, I got at age 9, and I watched him a lot. And I just fell in love with him. So I always wanted to be a mom. And I babysat for our whole church, pretty much. They'd call me if they needed to go somewhere and do something. And I'd always be willing to babysit if I could. And then, and they told me that I could not have kids because, well, I said, you might could get pregnant, but you won't be able to have the child survive because it won't progress far enough because you broke your pelvis. And so it's blocking the way that the baby will grow.
Wow.
And they said that, so you'll probably never have kids. You can adopt kids, but you won't have kids of your own.
Wow.
I was devastated because I loved kids, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I had got my patriarchal blessing before this. And it says that my blessing that I will, some of my greatest joys will be when raising my children. And so I just held on to that hope, you know, that I could have children. And then my dad reminded me that that could be in this life or the next. That's what people kept telling me. I'm like, no, I think that it's for this life because, yeah, I just think it is. And so they were like, okay, you can believe what you want to, Shanna, you know, try and give me some grace, I guess you could say. And then it was, okay, about 4.5 years into our marriage, I finally got pregnant. And it was a hard delivery.
Yeah, I was going to say, was it scary too? I mean, you were probably overjoyed, but also scared not knowing.
Yes, not knowing
how, you know, it would progress.
I was so scared that the baby wouldn't survive in me, you know, when I had my hospital bag packed for months before I was due. And then I just always had that feeling. And then they said that your baby will come early because there's not enough room. Well, I waited the week before, or the month before I waited, nothing happened. Then a week before I waited, nothing happened. Then, let's see, 5 days after I was due, then I was like, okay, I really feel like it's coming. She's coming. So then I went to the hospital and They said that I was in labor. And I was in labor for about 40 hours.
And oh, my gosh.
She finally came on July 5th. I was watching fireworks from a hospital window.
Oh.
Because I got admitted July 4th, 4th of July. And so I was watching fireworks. I was in pain.
Because you were having a baby.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or trying to have a baby. But she was stubborn.
But everything worked out. Like, she was fine. And
healthy she was baby. Safe. And
how big was she? Wow. Did she end up being like a normal size baby?
She was 7'2".
Absolutely perfect.
That's good.
Wow. And then you have a second daughter too. So.
And that was a hard one because I had, you know, it's the first one delivery was so hard for me that I'm like, Eric, I can't do this again. Mm-hmm. And they was like, that's okay. You know, we'll raise one kid and that's fine. But then, you know, I absolutely loved being a mom to Olivia, my oldest daughter. And then as time went on, I had the feeling that I had a prompting that I should have another baby. And I was like, probably not. This is probably not a prompting. It's probably just a feeling that I had because I want to have another baby or something. And then, we tried again to have a baby and for years. And she didn't come, you know, I didn't get pregnant until Olivia was about almost five years old. So
Wow. That's
when I had Bradley. So
how was that pregnancy for you? Like,
it was easy. I was still working at the elementary school when that happened, once I got pregnant. And then I was expected to leave work like months before the end of school because I didn't know how it's going to be, you know, if it was anything at first and it would have been hard. But I worked all the way through school. Not all the way through school because she was born in or through the semester.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bright was due on, one hospital gave me the due date of March 28th or something like that. February 28th. And then I switched hospitals because of the insurance and stuff. And then that hospital said, I have a due date, your due date. I said, I already know my due date. You know, it's February 24th or something like that. And they said, who gave that to you? I said, Covenant did. And they said, well, on our charts, it shows that you're due on like March 14th. I'm like, well, I can see that's kind of a big gap. So one of you guys are wrong. Well, turns out they're both wrong. I was there. They're trying to find it, you know, when my due date was that the whole time I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, I gave birth and I was holding Bradley. And then a nurse walked in and said, I found your due date. I said, oh, great. And they said, your baby's due on March 3rd. And it was March 2nd. So I was like, so they marked her, you know, she came early. So.
Right. Wow. That is so cool. So one of the other things that I remember you talking to me about was that feeling that you had to do your best friend's work.
Oh, yes. I was still in the hospital. I was like in rehab and everything. But then I had a feeling that it had been a year. I had a feeling that I needed to do Janelle's baptism work. Because that feeling just kept coming to my mind. And that feeling just, that urge just kept coming to me. And so, of course, my parents were like, okay, let's get it done. You feel like it's the time. And so I got baptized for her. But then, through my depression and everything, I was like, she's not going to accept it. I just had those thoughts. But then I got married, right? Mm-hmm. And I always wanted to have one of my friends be at my wedding, my school friends, you know. And I had really good family and friends at my wedding. And I was just missing one person. And that one person was Janelle. But as we were getting married, the brother who was doing our sealing, I think, yeah, our sealing, he looked at me and said, there's someone very special in this room. I just got married, so I was like, okay, yeah, there are a lot of special people here today. And then after I came back home from my honeymoon, my mom talked to me and she said, do you understand what Brother Anderson was saying to you? And I was saying, he said there's lots of special people there. And, I mean, my whole family was there, so yes, you're special. He said, no. Someone special came, was at your wedding. And she said, who have you always wanted to be at your wedding? And I was like, Janelle. And she goes, he saw her there. And I just kind of started tearing up, and I told my parents, like, that means she accepted. And my dad was like, maybe, you know, hopefully she did. I'm like, no, Dad, you don't understand. She was in the temple. So that means she accepted the gospel, because you can't be in the temple if you're not a member of the church. And he's like, you're right. So I was actually smart on something in there. So.
Wow.
Had good instinct.
Yeah. Wow. So how has it been like navigating life? Because I know you still have things that you're fighting through, right?
Oh,
like
yeah.
you still have things from the accident, that physical and emotional and spiritual. So like, what does life look like today for you? You know, what battles are you still fighting, and how have you been able to keep going?
Well, my life is really like a roller coaster. It goes up and down, because my feelings and emotions change all the time. Like, I have good weeks, and then I have really bad weeks, you know. And
that's then, from the brain injury, correct?
Yes, like it. My traumatic brain injury. And then,
do you have any more pain, like when you walk or anything like that, from like your broken pelvis, or do you feel pretty strong now?
I only get pain usually during the winter months because of the coldness. Mm-hmm. And so right now I'm just trying to hang on, you know, and I get so cold but my husband is so good to me, you know. He bought me a heating pad. He bought me a heating blanket this year, and he bought me a heating jacket. You know, so
oh, nice.
And also ear warmers that heat up too, so he said now you can go whenever you're really struggling, you have a lot in your mind, you just need to let it out. Then my counselor said that walking is good to let off your emotions steam, so mm-hmm. I've been walking, and he says now you can go for walks and not be cold.
Nice.
During the winter, so he's a good gift giver.
Yeah. Yeah.
Toast, get warm and toasty everywhere you go.
Yes.
I love that.
People are jealous of me.
How is motherhood for you?
Motherhood, I love it, you know, but I love kind of the newborn stages and, you know, the young kid stages, because once they turn a certain age, then they kind of like don't really respect you as much, I guess you could say.
No, really? No.
And so I'm not always the coolest mom, you know, so.
That's okay. I'm right up there with you. We can be uncool together.
Sounds good. But my little one still likes me. She still likes me, yeah. But, yeah. Yeah. Model Swan, I mean, she loves me, but she doesn't like me sometimes. Let's just say that.
You butt heads a little bit sometimes.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
That happens. So when you look back on your life and the accident, like, would you change it?
Oh, that's a hard question. Well, no, because this is who God wanted me to be. You know, it took me a long time to realize and accept that. I was in so much pain, and I used to write poems to express my sadness and grief. And so that's what I do a lot of times. And for I got a kidney stone whenever year 2000, I got a kidney stone. And so all I could do was lay in bed. And I didn't know I had a kidney stone. I went to two doctors and they said, nothing's wrong with you. It's probably residual pain from your car accident. I'm like, okay. And then another one said, you need to toughen up because there's nothing wrong with you. It's like, okay, bye-bye. And then I went to see my brother-in-law because my dad suggested it because he's a pain doctor. And he had a different doctor give me scans. And they found a 9.2 millimeter kidney stone.
Holy cow.
And I had to, they had to blast it into tiny pieces. So it took longer for it to pass because it just went out in small chunks, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that was very painful.
Yeah. So you did a lot of writing during that time?
Yes, a lot.
Do you remember writing before your accident, or do you think your accident kind of gave you, like, opened up that gift for you?
Well, I always enjoyed writing before my accident, you know, and I loved, like, English class and where we had to write stories. I loved to do that. But then after my accident, people kept saying, you need to write a book. I've gotten that comment like 500 times.
I know. Well, 501 because I told you to.
And so so I've really been thinking about it. But then I told my friend in Delisa Hargrove, she is an amazing woman, and she actually writes books and stuff. And she said she wants to help me write my story.
Wow.
And so we're like page 39 or something.
Oh, good. You got it started.
Yep.
That's awesome. We work on it
every Sunday, so.
I love that. Well, Shanna, I'm so impressed by you. I know I've only known you for a short time, but every time that I see you in church, you just light up the room. Like, you're smiling and you're happy and you get up there and you do your best, you know, no matter what job you're given or if you're trying to, you know, participate in lessons or whatever you're doing. Like, I feel like you really show that you're trying to live life, you know?
Yes.
And for the things that you've gone through, like, you definitely would have every reasonable reason, I guess, logical reason to shrink. But
yes.
You haven't.
But I had thought about it, you know, because this depression, it just bugs me down. And I still go to counseling for that. But I'm on the up and up right now. So
you are. Life. Yeah. Well, I think it's incredible. And you truly are a walking miracle. And I know one of the things you mentioned was that a lot of people in the city here, they were watching your story. They were praying for you. They were following your progress. And so, you know, you got to really be a light to a lot of people in the area, and not just your family and your loved ones, or even just the people in school, but a ton of people were able to, you know, raise their voices up to the Lord. Well, if you could leave one message for our listeners today, you know, kind of I like to call it your testimony takeaway, what would you leave for those who are listening to your story?
Well, something that's been hard for me through this whole experience is trusting the Lord. I would just say, trust the Lord and don't give up. Keep fighting, because great miracles can and will happen if you do that.
That's hard sometimes when you're going through, you know, accidents or tragedy, you know, mm-hmm. or loss, right, from your best mm-hmm. friend. Mm-hmm. But we're put on this earth to go through some hard things to yes. help us learn and enjoy the good, right?
Yes.
So I'm glad you took you've learned and grown from this.
I have. It's been hard, but you know, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure that, you know, with everything that you had to go through, your family had to adjust too.
Oh, yes.
You know, and they had a lot of things that they had to go through. Yes. And yes. So, you know, it's not just your tragedy. It's your trial, but it's also your family's trial and your success, right? It's turned out to be something that's shown you just how incredibly strong you really are. So. That's awesome.
And how much God is in our lives.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So. And sometimes I believe that, and sometimes, unfortunately, I don't.
Just because I think that's normal. I think it's normal for us to doubt.
Too, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, man. Well, Shanna, thank you so much for coming on tonight and for sharing your story with everybody and sharing your light and your perspective and your testimony. We really, really appreciate it. And I am so blessed to call you my friend and so happy that I don't have to pay you to be my friend.
Not yet.
No, that is true. I'm on the free trial basis right now, right? Yes. Oh, no. But it's been a very uplifting story and definitely something that kind of puts things back into perspective for me. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you for letting me share, and I hope that somebody can take away something from this, you know, my tragedy, you know.
I'm sure they can.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and thank you everyone for watching and tuning in to Shanna's story. If you feel that this could help somebody, go ahead and share it. You know, hit that share button and let's get this story out there so that people can hear it as well. And if you have a story that you want to share it with others, go to latterdaylights.com and let's hear about it.
Absolutely. And we would love to hear from you guys too. We love getting comments on these stories and just let us know, you know, what you took away from Shanna's story and what part meant the most to you and really touched your heart. So we would love to hear that. All right. Yep. Well, that's all that we have for today. Shanna, thank you again for stopping by and sharing all of this with us. We really, really appreciate you. And we appreciate all of our listeners. Until next week, we hope you guys have a beautiful, beautiful week. Talk to you later.
Great. Thanks. See you guys.
Bye.